they thought we were on the verge of signing an agreement and that, you know, this would not have been controversial.
Taliban talks tumble. It's Tuesday, September 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're happy to have you with us today, and you can follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australian brush ablaze, learning opportunities for Rohingya, little local profit from Chinese gold mining, aging virtually, and Silicon Valley politics. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump's abrupt cancellation of planned peace talks with Taliban leaders creates new uncertainty about his vow to end the country's 18-year military effort to fight terrorism in Afghanistan and could lead to more bloodshed ahead of Afghan elections late this month. Trump called off separate negotiations with the Taliban and Afghan President Ashraf Ghani he was planning at his Camp David presidential retreat outside Washington on Sunday. Speaking Monday before departing the White House to attend a campaign rally, Trump reiterated he called off the talks after the Taliban announced it had carried out a car bomb attack in Kabul last week that killed 12 people, including a U.S. soldier.
A great American soldier, a wonderful young man from Puerto Rico, families from Puerto Rico. And you can't do that. You can't do that with me. So they're dead as far as I'm concerned. And we've hit the Taliban harder in the last 4 days than they've been hit in over 10 years. So that's the way it is.
Trump had hoped to reach an agreement calling for the withdrawal of 5,000 of the 14,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan, but his deal-making efforts drew wide public scorn from Republican and Democratic lawmakers alike for his plan to invite the Taliban to Camp David, especially during the week of the September 11th terrorist attack anniversary. Jeff M. Smith, a research fellow at the Asian Studies Center of the Heritage Foundation in Washington, tells VOA the hope for a deal outweighed appearances.
I don't think many people were expecting a signing ceremony at Camp David, so I have to say it caught most of us by surprise. It's understandable, in my opinion, that there are criticism emerging over the optics of hosting the Taliban at Camp David on the week of 9/11. Obviously, the president and those who were organizing this meeting thought that they would have a positive, optimistic message to come from such an arrangement. They thought we were on the verge of signing an agreement and that, you know, this would not have been controversial had it gone well. We've had relative agreement with the Taliban on the outlines of a U.S. Taliban deal, I would even argue, for many years now. The Taliban have been sort of informally pledging not to host international terrorist groups or anyone targeting the United States in exchange for a withdrawal of U.S. troops. In principle, we've agreed on this for a long time, frankly. The toughest part of any negotiation has always been getting the Taliban to sit down in negotiations with the Afghan government, something they have firmly resisted for the entire duration of the conflict. What had given some people hope is that as we've inched forward with this interim U.S. Taliban deal, the Taliban did seem to begin walking back from their staunch opposition to negotiating with the Afghan government, which was always the end goal.
Heritage Foundation research fellow Jeff M. Smith. The U.S. involvement in Afghanistan is the longest war in American history. It started with U.S. military efforts to wipe out al-Qaeda terrorist training grounds protected by the Taliban that were used to launch the 2001 terrorist attacks on the United States. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. Chinese state media accuse United States of meddling in Hong Kong affairs. Former Pentagon Chief Mattis says U.S. should side with Hong Kong protesters. Vietnam economy benefits from U.S.-China trade war spillover. Nissan CEO announces his resignation. Australia battles fierce early season brush fires. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Queensland is facing its worst brush fire threat in recorded history as more than 50 fires burn across the Australian state. Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us that farther south, crews are battling a similar number of outbreaks in New South Wales.
This is the worst start to the bushfire season on record in Queensland. Dozens of fires are burning and several homes have been destroyed. Tracy and Dennis Beggs were forced to flee their property as the flames advanced.
Those fires went through the back there like a freight train. It was, I don't know, like a plane going past. They were moving so fast.
You could see the flames and you could just hear the roar of them.
More than 100 blazes are burning across northern New South Wales state and southern parts of Queensland. They've been fanned by high winds and tinder dry conditions. The danger isn't expected to pass until Wednesday. Hundreds of firefighters have been deployed and dozens of homes have been saved from the blazes. A volunteer firefighter was badly injured when flames engulfed a fire truck near the town of Tenterfield, suffering serious burns to his hands, legs and face. A fire near the city of Armidale in New South Wales covers more than 60,000 hectares. Australia's entire east coast is facing an above-average risk of bushfires when summer starts. David Littleproud, the Minister for Natural Disaster and Emergency Services, says firefighters will be equipped to deal with the threats.
The reality is my job is to make sure that those men and women that are prepared to put their lives on the line for you and me have the equipment they need. They are given the tools and resources they need. They have the science to understand that these events could become more severe. And how do we equip them to actually not only keep us safe but keep them safe?
Officials are warning some of the fires could burn for weeks. Experts say Australia's annual bushfire season is starting earlier and lasting longer. Climate change is a key factor, as is a long drought, which has exacerbated the fire threat, with summer still more than 2 months away. Most wildfires are caused by lightning strikes, while others are set accidentally by faulty power lines or farming equipment. Some, however, are the work of arsonists. Bushfires are a part of Australia's environment. Many of the nation's native plants are fire-prone and extremely combustible. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia News, President Donald Trump is denying he overruled Vice President Mike Pence and other administration officials about hosting the Taliban at Camp David for peace talks. "I took my own advice," Trump told reporters Monday. In a Trump-like tweet, Vice President Pence backed up the president. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. Access to education in Bangladesh's Rohingya refugee camps is limited to early primary school level, so alternative life skills training is being offered to help fill the gap. Teenage refugees are being taught skills that will help them earn money and cope with daily difficulties. Steve Sanford in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, speaks to young female refugees about the project.
With limited educational facilities at Bangladesh camps for Rohingya refugees, young people here welcome special job training like tailoring and computing. New multi-purpose centers like this are limited subject-wise, but young Rohingya refugees say they provide better options than many had back home in Myanmar, also known as Burma.
In Burma, we can't do anything. Nobody teaches us, but now that we are in Bangladesh, there are people who are teaching us many things. People donate sewing machines so we can make our own clothes. Now we are learning a lot and can make a career out of this job and won't get in trouble trying to make a living.
Most of the skills being taught can help young women in their daily lives and be used to find a job and earn a wage. These students are working with rechargeable batteries and solar lights.
It's good to have the electricity so we don't need to eat indoors. It's very convenient for us. We don't need to travel far to buy gas for the lantern. When we go to the toilet at night, we can carry the light because it's dangerous to go to the toilet without lights. Now that we have power, it's safer for us.
Besides working skills, the teenagers are given a comfortable environment to discuss cultural challenges that they don't always talk about at home.
The thing that is really important for me is to not get married at a young age because being under 18. We have no idea about life or even have knowledge to work and make a living. Many girls get married before they are 18. They must work hard and get old quickly.
With no signs of imminent repatriation for more than 500,000 young refugees, most families are hoping that a proper school curriculum for the teenage children will be implemented to prevent what many analysts predict could be a lost generation. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh.
Coming up, digging for gold leaves a mess for some. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia, the lander module from India's moon mission has been located on the lunar surface after it lost contact with the space station. The head of India's space agency says efforts to continue to try to establish contact with it will continue. India was trying to become just the fourth country to land a vessel on the lunar surface. Land daily on our VOA Asia Facebook page. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, villagers around Maganga, a town in northern Cameroon, are protesting against Chinese gold miners for allegedly ruining the land. The villagers say they are poorer than before the Chinese arrived, with their farms and forests now destroyed. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Maganga.
These are cattle ranchers and farmers from villages around the northern Cameroon town of Maganga. Their song says that if nothing is done to save them from Chinese miners, famine may strike their locality in a not too distant future. Their spokesperson is 54-year-old cattle rancher Mamoudou Poro.
C'est chinois qui nous fondu. On ne peut pas faire l'agriculture là où les gens.
He says the miners destroy farms and do not even care to cover holes and trenches they dig on roads and cattle ranches before leaving. He says they want the Chinese to build the roads they destroyed and fill the trenches they dug, give them electricity and at least a school and a market before leaving. Until 2014, Maganga and surrounding villages cultivated maize, beans, groundnuts, and producing cattle for markets in Cameroon, Nigeria, and the Central African Republic. Then, some 300 new mining sites producing gold, zinc, nickel, and other materials were discovered in the region. Among the explorers were Chinese companies. More than 100 of the company's miners work in and around Maganga. They use caterpillar tractors and equipment that clean stones and sift soil, allowing them to detect gold faster than locals who use manual tools. Locals are paid about $2 per day to work at the Chinese mining sites. Cameroon's Minister of Mines, Gabriel Dododoke, says the complaints of the villagers are legitimate. He says he has asked the companies to respect the terms of their contract with the government.
Les populations riveraines n'en bénéficient pas encore tel qu'on pourrait attendre.
He says the population suffers as a result of environmental degradation and does not benefit as expected because their mineral resources are exploited in a disorganized manner. He says he has given instructions to all exploitation companies to make sure they respect environmental laws and stop destroying farms and cattle ranches, which for now are the only sources of living for the people of the area. Officials with the Chinese mining company in Maganga declined to be interviewed about the allegations. However, company official Hu Long said the firm has assisted communities by providing aid to hospitals and building or refurbishing schools when solicited. He says the company also employs about 100 youths. This is not the first time Cameroonian villagers have protested alleged exploitation by the Chinese. In 2016, residents of Eastern Cameroon had conflicts with small-scale Chinese gold miners who had been there for 6 years. The local miners said the Chinese had taken away their livelihoods and were not living up to promises to develop the area. Cameroon has not officially announced how much it gains from the mining business, but says it contributes a significant amount to the country's GDP. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Meganga, Northern Cameroon.
This news from VOA Asia. Vietnam expects another surge in GDP growth this year due to spillover from the Sino-U.S. trade dispute and a discovery that its economy was previously larger than once thought. Officials believe the $300 billion economy will show robust growth between 6.6 and 6.8% this year. Grow your news awareness daily at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, people around the world are living longer, according to the World Health Organization. By 2020, there will be more people who are 60 or older than children under 5 years old. Many adult children are painfully seeing their parents experience cognitive decline and symptoms of dementia. What if virtual reality or VR can help prevent or delay the onset of cognitive decline? VOA's Elizabeth Lee shares her visit to a VR lab at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles.
Wayne Garcia is starting an unconventional workout that may help him avoid a frightening future. He is pedaling with the hope that what happened to his loved ones will not happen to him.
It's very scary that one day that could be me. Grandparents both had dementia. My father, he had dementia as well. And my mom has dementia. Just the sadness of, you know, because you remember what your dad was like, what your mom was like when they were good. And then the decline now, and now you're taking care of them rather than when they used to take care of you.
Garcia is participating in a study to see if some virtual reality along with exercise could help.
Looking into the future, because I am 57, I look at this study as maybe something that could help me in the future.
The actual diagnostic definition of dementia is when a person is no longer able to take care of themselves. Things like paying the bills, driving, cooking for themselves, dressing themselves. This is really late stage. It happens much later in the progression of a disease. A lot of the neurodegenerative diseases, which are the underlying etiologies of dementia, take 10, 20 years to develop.
Judy Paw is a part of a team of researchers studying the effects of virtual reality, or VR, on the brain and cognition related to aging. Paw says unlike 2D games, VR provides a first-person 3D immersive experience that is critical to spatial memory training.
Our goal is to prevent that, to prevent dementia, to prevent Alzheimer's disease. There are no effective treatments yet. We hope that we will get there eventually. But my perspective and the research that we do in my laboratory at USC is really surrounding prevention.
The VR study targets some of the risk factors of Alzheimer's disease and cognitive dysfunction, which include a sedentary lifestyle and lack of cognitive and social stimulation. With this VR experience, participants are exercising their body and brain at the same time.
I have to pedal and I have to keep my heart rate on. There's a monitor there, so I try to keep it at 135 on the monitor. Then there's certain items that they have me pick up.
Select the brakes to feed the animals.
The participants also have to learn and remember their route as they navigate around this world.
Understanding changes in the brain that happen with exercise, changes in the brain that happen when you're in an enriched environment, and putting those two together, and that's what our intervention is currently targeting.
Even if virtual reality can help, it may not be for everyone. In a feasibility study, 4 out of 20 people withdrew from the research due to symptoms of motion sickness. Pa will be conducting trials similar to this one for the next year to gather more data. Garcia has high hopes for what this technology might mean for the future.
There might be a place where you could go and you can get your daily dose of virtual reality and cardio to keep the mind going.
Although in the early stages of research, the goal is prevent or even delay the onset of cognitive decline so people can have quality of life in their golden years. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Democratic presidential candidates are flocking to Silicon Valley, but this time it's different than when candidates wooed wealthy tech executives at Facebook, Google, and other mega companies. Some now attack companies over issues such as data privacy, antitrust, and worker rights. Michelle Quinn looked at how this election season reflects the changing views of tech across the United States.
They say that these technology companies are the future of the American workforce. I think that might be right. So do we want a future where there are no protections?
When presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg stopped by a protest in front of Uber's headquarters in San Francisco, he lobbed an attack against technology industry darlings. He's not alone.
It's time to break up these big companies so they don't have so much power over everyone else. I've got a plan to protect consumers and competition.
It used to be political candidates came to Silicon Valley to get their photos taken with prominent tech CEOs. Now big tech is a punching bag for some. Elizabeth Warren says it's time to break up Google, Amazon, and Facebook. Bernie Sanders criticizes technology companies for killing journalism and contributing to dangerous policing. Kamala Harris, a California native, has joined others to give contract workers more rights, going against Uber and Lyft.
If you're a Democratic presidential candidate, you can pick and choose ways to attack Silicon Valley and technology now in ways that were harder to do 20 years ago, when Silicon Valley really only wore a white hat. They were only the good guys.
Those white hat days are long over. It's the tech backlash season. President Trump set the tone attacking the industry over claims of censorship of conservative voices. Lonnie Chen was the head of policy for Republican Mitt Romney's campaign in 2012.
My view is that tech at this point is more defensive rather than offensive. They're thinking about who do we want to avoid rather than who actively are we trying to get behind.
Political candidates have long looked to Silicon Valley to raise money, but even fundraising has become more fraught.
When you're in an era of politics that is fundamentally populist and fundamentally much more oriented away from big business and away from big money, to come here and raise that money and try and garner that support comes with a cost.
So far, there is a divide between tech leaders and the rank and file. Tech executives give to Democrat moderates, such as New Jersey Senator Cory Booker and Democratic frontrunner Joe Biden, both of whom have not made tech much of an issue. However, tech employees and their families are donating to Warren and Buttigieg. At a recent Democratic meeting in Silicon Valley, people gathered to discuss candidates for local office.
And yes, there are presidential candidates standing with you.
Tech will most certainly be scrutinized in the coming months, while candidates and President Trump attack companies on issues that resonate with American voters. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Besides Big Tech, where our program is found on iTunes and SoundCloud, you can find us on the radio, like Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today and invite you to come back for our program again. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Kelly Jean Kelly. And thanks to Michelle Liu for hooking us up on Facebook today. If you were listening, streaming live, it's thanks to her. We hope you have a great day ahead. I'm Jim Stevenson. Take care.